all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense for this Wednesday, March 29th. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. And on this day, 6 days prior to the big election, we're going to talk about some new national attention coming to the state Supreme Court race, courtesy of a man who wrote the book, The Fall of Wisconsin. Dan Kaufman has a new article in The New Yorker. We will be talking about that. It quotes our friend, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who will join us live a little bit later on this hour to talk about that article and the letter that she helped lead that has more than 300 physician signatures on it supporting Janet Protasiewicz in next week's Supreme Court race because the very state of healthcare in Wisconsin depends on the results of that state Supreme Court election next week. So Kristen will talk to us about why so many doctors are taking a stand on next week's election. Then in our second hour, we'll get your 2 cents on a $7 billion surplus, because once next week's election is behind us, Wisconsin legislators will get to work on drawing up a new two-year state budget that will determine the level of state support for all kinds of services that affect daily life in our state, from the quality of our roads to the quality of our education, whether we actually get high-speed internet spreading across the state, are we investing in our rural economy, are we investing in our cities, etc. So we will talk to State Assembly Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire. She will help us outline the ways that you can provide your ideas, especially on how to handle that multi-billion dollar surplus, the one that Republicans have been sitting on for over a year and that they still have done nothing about. And that's what we'd like to know from you is, what do you think the legislature should do with some of that record $7 billion surplus? Now, bear in mind, we're not talking about putting $7 billion all into one thing. It can be a combination of things, of tax cuts and, you know, money for schools, one-time money for this or ongoing money for that. And we'd just like to know if you could take the place of your state assembly rep or your state senator, what is something that you think the legislature needs to be investing in, doing a better job of, thanks to the surplus, than what they've been doing before. If you'd like to share your ideas on what the legislature should be doing, you can call 844-967-2789 or the Up North line 715-388-7155 and our email address radio@upnorthnewswi.com. That's where you find the work that my team does every day over at upnorthnewswi.com. Look for us at upnorthnewswi on social media. And again, you can either call or email us, but we also have this little live stream that's running right now on the Facebook pages of Civic Media and Up North News and Bull Falls Radio. And if you see the live stream, if you see my mug up there and put a comment underneath it that answers this question or says anything else, you're quite liable to see that question show up on screen here to share with everybody else who's watching through Facebook, as well as the folks listening on the radio. If you call in, however, you will talk to one Aaron Zommers first and foremost, who joins us from the studios down in Madison. Mr. Zommers, good morning.
Good morning to you too, Pat. Day two of being live again, I'm already feeling much more awake. I don't know about you.
I will admit that yesterday I was really running on fumes because of the travel nightmare that we had for the 2 days prior, where we were basically up all night, four different flights to get home. And I said to Sherry at the end of the day yesterday that, you know, just prior to going on vacation, I felt crispy. You know that feeling that you're just, ugh. And I said, it's back. I feel crispy again. But, you know, a good night's sleep does wonders. And guess what? Another good night's sleep will do even more wonders. So let's see if I can string two nights together. How great would that be?
See if we can get a hat trick.
Oh, let's not get greedy here. But I will definitely take it. And by the way, it has, unlike you youngins who struggle to wake up when you do. And when is your alarm set for these days, Mr. Zommers?
I have one set for 3:45 and another at 4:15.
Wow. That is impressive, because mine is set for 4:30. And then the backup one is 4:45. But then again, I don't have a commute. My commute is, what, about 25 feet, you know, from the bedroom to the home office. So it's not that feeling crispy in my case at my age. I'm always waking. I woke up again today, like 5 minutes before my alarm. It, you know, that's just that what happens. I pour a glass of Metamucil. I get ready to roll with the day here. So it's not that. It's that by the end of the day, I mean, it occurred to me that with the time change, you know, with daylight savings time here. Well, again, let's take it back to Aaron. When have you typically been going to bed since we started this early morning show together in early November?
For a while, I was going to bed around maybe 10. That was not working. Now I go to bed more like 8:30 or 9.
8:30 or 9, which, you know, has been all right to do in the wintertime. But we noticed, you know, going to bed last night or the night before. Last night we're like, it's going to bed at 8:30 thing is going to get a little tougher when the sun is still up at 8:30 when it doesn't set till 8:45. So we will be investing in some darker curtains for the bedroom and, you know, trying to make sure that we don't once again get crispy, shall we say, coming into that. So you're going to need your own sleep strategy for that late sunset.
Yeah, I think new curtains might be in order for me too.
Yeah. Hey, maybe we can get the station to reimburse us for it. That would work. Yeah, then we can get some really good ones. I've been delaying sports because I cannot believe how the Badgers men's basketball season ended. They're out of the NIT. North Texas closed on a 10-0 run to beat Wisconsin 56-54. Wisconsin led the entire game until there were 2 minutes remaining. And then Wisconsin went without a point for the final 9 minutes. They had 10 straight misses, and the Badgers are out of the NIT, so their season is over as well. Let's take a break. We'll talk more about what's in the news after this. You're up north. We are going to be talking a bit about Blood, Sweat, and Tears coming up later in the history lesson and music break part of this hour. And as a result of talking about the Blood, Sweat, and Tears debut album, I thought we'd play a couple of cuts from that throughout the course of this hour, including that one of my all-time favorite songs for, I'm not even sure for what reason, Blood, Sweat, and Tears and When I Die. It's just a nice little ditty that I enjoy playing. We asked for our question of the day, what should the legislature do with the record $7 billion surplus? And I'm not sure what this says, Aaron, that three comments have come in already and the first two are in Russian. So I don't know. Either we're being trolled by a bot factory or we've just got some new fans, you know, in other time zones.
Unless you deleted them, I don't even see them on my feed.
No, they got deleted. They got deleted right away. But Deanna Doyle, we do thank you for noting that some of this money should go toward roads and infrastructure, teacher training, retraining teachers. We have an opioid problem in this state, and high speed internet throughout the state. And I believe pretty much all of those were covered in Governor Evers' budget proposal. And I think we are still waiting to see what's the Republican proposal? What's the counter? The thing that we have consistently heard from Republicans in the legislature, much like Republicans in Congress, they continue to say that Governor Evers and President Biden want to spend too much and that there need to be cuts. That would be a fair point if Republicans at both levels would simply put up or shut up and say, okay, you think this is too much. What's your plan? What's your alternative? We're still waiting on that. At the national level, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy sent this, you know, really tough sounding letter to President Biden saying, we are greatly concerned about, you know, how your reckless position on the debt ceiling is going to, you know, cause a problem for the economy. And, you know, President Biden, as he always does, is like, come on, man, what's your plan? What's your option? And by the way, that's what we do in the budget. When we're talking about the debt ceiling, we're just talking about paying the bills that you guys in Congress, you know, have already approved. You previously approved this spending, which is why I think the whole debt ceiling debate is, you know, is as phony as a $3 bill, but it is the law right now. And we need Congress to simply agree to honor their past obligations. And then if you want to propose a budget that spends a lot less, hey, knock yourself out, go for it. And, you know, the same goes on this $7 billion state surplus, where Republicans in the legislature have tried pretty much every excuse or distraction in the book, saying, well, it's not really $7 billion, and oh, there's one-time money in there, and oh, so much of it is taken up for. Look, it's a surplus. It's whether it's $7 billion, whether there's $6 or $5 or $4 billion in there to work with, it's a surplus. And there's more than enough there to provide tax cuts, but also to do what you would do at home if you found that you had a surplus. And if you had a hole in the roof, you would patch the hole in the roof. You might also increase the kids' allowance, sure, but you would fix the hole in the roof. And what we have not heard yet from Republicans is, what is it that you're willing to fix? And that's the part that is especially noteworthy, is that there are things to fix, and that there are, in fact, things that have needed to be addressed for a long time. And the legislature has been ducking its responsibility and passing the buck, quite literally, to lower units of government, local levels of government. And that takes us to next week's election, not the state Supreme Court election, not the constitutional amendments on bail, which, as we explained yesterday, both deserve no votes because they don't actually fix the problem of bail. They just put up this veneer of appearing to be soft on crime, but they don't actually fix the problem. So there's more than the Supreme Court race, more than the constitutional amendments. Also on the ballot are plenty of local races, school boards, town boards, other local offices. There's a special election in the 8th State Senate District. There's a mayoral race in Green Bay. There's a mayoral race in Madison. There's a county executive race in Outagamie County, you know, in and around the Appleton area, for example. But it's really worth noting here, and this information we get from the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, put together by Dan Rossmiller over there, there are another 82 local school district referendums on the ballot across 68 school districts in Wisconsin next week. Now, of those 82 total referendums, a whopping 53 of them are not some kind of new construction. They are for operating revenue to exceed those Republican-imposed revenue limits. Those 53 operating referendum are on top of last year's record 92 measures. All of it is just a damning indictment of Republican budget austerity. We don't ask any other group to go hat in hand to the voters and say, we need to raise your taxes just to keep the lights on. I mean, we sure don't ask the military to do that. We don't ask any other agency to do it the way that we do for the education of our children, because of this ongoing Republican war against educating our children in public schools. Now, of the 53 referendums that want to exceed state-imposed revenue limits, 43 of them are one-time only deals. They're looking for temporary, or on the ballot, it'll be called non-recurring authority to increase the district's revenue limit. The other 10 are asking for permanent authority, recurring authority to increase the district's revenue limit. It's their way of crying uncle, of saying it is not feasible, it is not possible to adequately educate your children under the revenue limits imposed by this legislature. And then there would be 29 borrowing referendums on the ballot in districts across the state. Those are the ones you're more used to hearing about. Those are the kind that ask voters for approval to issue bonds. In other words, to borrow money for major construction, remodeling, maintenance projects for school facilities. There are 11 districts that have both a borrowing and an operating cost referendum on the ballot. What's that mean? It means space is tight, the buildings are aging, we can't afford to pay the light bill, much less get our facilities in decent shape. So when this is all said and done, and we don't know how many of these referendums will pass next week, but we can tell you this, heading into the election, currently, of the 421 school districts in Wisconsin, 249 are functioning under some type of operational referendum. That is nearly 60% of the school districts are taking care of their daily operating costs only after going to voters and pleading for more help because the legislature has long since abdicated its role in the education of our children. And in case you think that the response from the legislature will be, well, you know, the tax burden is too high, Let's make this clear. Let's remember something that came from the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum back in January. Quote, Wisconsin's state and local tax burden fell last year to its lowest level on record. Local taxes, as a share of income taxes, have never been lower in more than a half century of data. And state and federal taxes on families and businesses are also near historic lows. These levels are at the lowest level since the Wisconsin Policy Forum and its predecessor, the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, began tracking the burden of state and local taxes back in 1970. Now, here comes the part that's going to be the eye-opener. The eye-opener is that state tax revenues have grown since Republicans took over in 2010 by 57%, while local tax collections have grown by only 24%. In other words, less than half as much as state revenue. So what does that mean in plain English? State legislators have done their part to keep the tax spigot open that benefits them. It gave them a $7 billion surplus at the state level while they put restrictions on schools and cities and counties and towns, making them look like the bad guys for having to ask voters to raise taxes just to maintain an adequate level of service. In other words, this legislature that's been run by Republicans for the past 12 years has resembled a shakedown racket more than a partner in educating our kids, paving our roads, attracting young families, attracting entrepreneurs. They have been completely self-interested in their own power and in their own comfort, rather than the service that a legislature should be engaged in. And so when we talk about this $7 billion surplus and what can be done, what needs to be done, what we find is that these are things that, like our first comment of the day said from Deanna, she listed, I have to say, I'm not taking issue with Deanna at all. I'm saying there's nothing special here. It's roads, it's infrastructure, it's education, it's the opioid problem, it's high-speed internet. The fact that with $7 billion in surplus, we're still talking about getting a legislature to fund the basics of state government says so much about who is in a position of power in Madison these days. But we've seen that lack of willingness, that allergy to adequate spending at the state level. We described a few minutes ago the allergy to adequate spending at the federal level, while at the same time they won't tell you what it is they want to cut. And then when it's brought up that, well, apparently they want to cut Medicare or Social Security. Oh, no, we don't want to cut those things. It's like I've said all the time. When the right wing talks about cutting waste, fraud, and abuse, and you hear that all the time, we need to cut waste, fraud, and abuse. By and large, you're the waste they want to cut. Unless you're a multimillionaire and we're talking about your income tax rate, you're the waste that they want to cut. And even though people will continue to say, well, I think there's too much spending, they're also going to note that there's, you know, too much spending on them. That's what they have to put up with at the local level and raise their taxes locally as a result. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kristen Lyerly. She has been part of a group that has been pushing for Janet Protasiewicz, the Milwaukee County judge in the state Supreme Court election. And it's not just her. It's not just one or two other doctors. It's more than 300 who have signed a letter supporting Judge Janet Protasiewicz over former Justice Dan Kelly because of the impact on the health care of women and, frankly, the health care of everybody in the state of Wisconsin. We'll be back. You're up north.
In a world to carry on, to carry on.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I just want the record to reflect I did not request Barry Manilow to be played at 6:30 on a Wednesday morning. That must mean Dr. Lyerly has been conspiring with Aaron to tinker with my bumper music. Dr. Lyerly, how do you plead?
We missed you, Pat.
Oh, bless your heart. How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. It is so good to have you back and just to be back together again.
It's been a fun couple of weeks off, but you know, there's just so much going on and you got to get back into the swing of things here. And it's nice to have you doing it because you have played such a role in some of the things that we've got to get caught up on again. I mean, any one of these two things would be enough. One is the letter that you helped lead, signed by more than 300 physicians and health professionals about the state Supreme Court race. But before we even get to that, I will note that the new Dan Kaufman article in The New Yorker dropped overnight. And Dan Kaufman wrote the quintessential history of the right-wing takeover of Wisconsin since 2010 in his book, The Fall of Wisconsin. And Dan Kaufman, I mean, nobody does a better job of basically chronicling in a very linear, understandable way what Republicans have done to this state over the past 12 years. And Kristen, you're quoted in his article. You had some good conversations with him as part of this article that basically sets up the state Supreme Court race, sets up all the conditions. And obviously the healthcare roles that you have had helped inform those interviews. Can you tell us a bit about your conversations with Dan?
We had such a nice time together. He is just a brilliant writer. He doesn't just give you the news, but he really puts it in a personal context and makes it feel so relevant. And he loves Wisconsin. So it's easy to just have this conversation with him and for him to really understand what's happening here in the state and how much it means to all of us. So I don't even know. I haven't read the article yet, to be honest with you, because I was busy yesterday. So I'm looking forward to reading it tomorrow. But I can tell you that we had a couple meals together and had a great conversation and just talked a lot about what this all means and, you know, just what's at stake.
Yeah, he talks to several folks, you know, starting with a woman who takes him down the main artery in Sheboygan. And talks about how Sheboygan once was in a single legislative district, but then Republicans, you know, when they went about their legislative district line now runs right down the street. So neighbors across the street are represented by somebody entirely different. And the upshot of that is that now the city of Sheboygan, which is Democratic, has two Republican legislators representing them instead. So he talks about the base of all of this was Republicans rigging the maps when they first took power. And then all the things they've done since then, which have again been against Wisconsin values, have been against what the majority is in poll after poll after poll, but they do it because they can get away with it. And that is why we have an abortion ban from 1849 back in play. And you know, before I was leaving on the trip, Kristen, they were talking about you know, that they would maybe put in exceptions for rape and incest. They were trying to sound moderating about the 1849 ban, but I'm pretty sure you agree with me that that was window dressing at best.
Totally. This is just a political win for them. I mean, rape and incest for the Republicans are just words. But for people, for my patients, they are traumatic, life-changing experiences. And putting in exceptions for rape and incest really doesn't at all change access or change outcomes. It's just a win for Republicans. So this is a non-starter. This law just needs to be repealed. It's just that simple.
And if the legislature's not going to do it, and of course it's not because they've gerrymandered themselves into a permanent majority, well, then you have this state Supreme Court race, which again, because a conservative justice is retiring, if Janet Protasiewicz wins this race, progressives will control the Supreme Court 4-3 for the first time in over 15 years. And so there will be talk about the abortion ban. There will be cases about fair maps and letting people actually choose who their legislators are going to be instead of legislators choosing them. Dan Kaufman's article goes through all of the other corruption that has gone on in the past 12 years, you know, like the Fred Prehn situation, conspiring with legislators to stay on the Natural Resources Board, even though his term had expired. There was the criminal investigation into whether Scott Walker and other Republicans were illegally colluding with outside groups, you know, on election campaigns, all of these things and more. So while obviously the question of women's healthcare rights has loomed largest, there's so many things at stake in this race.
Let's not forget ballot drop boxes. Yeah. That's the one that really resonates when I talk with friends who are not in Wisconsin. And I explain to them that we can't even put our ballots in a drop box, but we can put it in a mailbox and we can hand it to somebody at a voting booth, but no drop boxes. That just doesn't make any sense. So many different things. This has, like you said, Pat, so much to do with the foundation of our democracy here in Wisconsin. And it's all at stake on Tuesday when we go to the polls.
Yeah, it does. And again, the article talks about Dr. Lyerly, who has long brown hair and a disarming smile, was born and raised near Charlesburg, a hamlet south of Green Bay, named after her great-great-grandfather. It was a supper club and a church, pretty much, she said. She was first in her family to go to college. On and on it goes. I mean, you were just... What are you here?
Can I give a shout out to Repke's in Charlesburg?
Of course you can.
If you haven't been there, the schnitzel is like off the hook. So mm-hmm. Yummy in the old fashions.
So after talking about your upbringing and your medical education, it then gets to the point where you were one of three doctors who joined a lawsuit brought by Josh Call, the state attorney general, challenging the law. That case is eventually going to come before the state Supreme Court. And, you know, that state Supreme Court will be either controlled by progressives or conservatives, depending on next week's election. And so bringing it back to next week's election, you and more than 300 other docs signed a letter endorsing Janet Protasiewicz. How did that come about?
Well, we worked with the Committee to Protect Healthcare, and they recognize that this is an issue that affects the entire House of Medicine. This isn't just the OBGYNs who are worried about it, but it's the emergency medicine docs, family medicine docs, residents, medical students, people who have dedicated our lives to take care of our patients. We recognize that this is interference in the doctor-patient relationship, and that means that we can't take the best possible care of our patients. And in some cases, we can't take care of our patients at all. So over 300 doctors, and doctors are typically not political, came together from across the state, across specialties, to put our foot down and say, this has got to change. I think it's an incredibly meaningful gesture.
Dan Kaufman's article in The New Yorker also quotes Abigail Cutler, an OBGYN based at the UW Hospital in Madison, who says the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade is affecting physicians' judgment of these situations. Abortion is something deeply integrated into OBGYN care, miscarriage management, fertility management, contraception. Abortion can be part of all of that. She has performed life-saving abortions, but operating within the narrow legal exception has her fraught with fear. She notes that pregnancy exacerbates conditions like cervical cancer and chronic kidney disease. And then she has this line that we've heard from you so many times, Kristen. How close does someone have to be to that line of death in order for it to be considered saving their life?
Dr. Cutler is brilliant. She's at the University of Wisconsin, and everything that she says is like magic and so true. But she's also doing the research and helping us understand what doctors know and how we take care of our patients and what more information we need from, you know, from research to be able to let us take care of our patients even better. So to hear this from Dr. Cutler, I think, wow. I don't even know what else to say, Pat. I mean, listening to Dan's words, knowing how he understands Wisconsin.
And Dan goes on to follow along, you know, in campaign events for Dan Kelly, talks about, you know, his own upbringing, his decision in 1988 to enroll in the Christian Broadcasting Network Law School, which was founded by TV preacher Pat Robertson. Now it's renamed Regent University School of Law. But basically, Pat Robertson's biographer wrote that, you know, Robertson's goal was for the graduates to, quote, gradually infiltrate secular society.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Dan Kelly was there. He edited the inaugural issue of the school's law review, saying that, you know, today it is popular to argue that law is nothing but a humanly created instrument. Law originates with God and is impressed on his creation, including mankind, which, again, If we're going to be this diverse country of people who worship in all manner of ways, to say that your way is the one way that government should be run, sure seems like a recipe for conflict and a lot of the things that have people very worried about human rights, much less women's rights, you know, the right to an education, everything else.
Did you watch the debate at all last week?
No. And Aaron, you were telling me as well that that debate was worth watching. Aaron, what was it? What was your observation that you wanted to share about it?
Right. What I had mentioned to Pat about the debate is that the whole time, Dan Kelly just sounded like a belittling, condescending, abusive husband, like my old dumb ball and chain wife, that dumb woman over there. She was lying. She made this up. I didn't do that. Come on. She's so stupid. Why would you listen to her? Is what he sounded like the whole time.
Not very Christian.
No. And what did you get out of it, Krista?
Oh, same thing. He was so pompous and ugly, and she's trying to explain things and answer questions, and he just keeps coming back. There you go again, Janet. You're lying. I mean, it was brutal to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, and unfortunately, I guess, is that despite a recent spate of losses statewide by Wisconsin conservatives, Dan Kaufman writes, Republicans show no sign of moderating. This month, the legislature blocked a requirement that seventh graders be vaccinated against meningitis. The state Supreme Court reappointed Jim Troupas, the Donald Trump attorney who tried to get the election overturned, to another three-year term on a state judicial advisory committee. And on it goes. I mean, you even had Rebecca Bradley, one of the most right-wing justices on the court, who would like to have probably overturned the 2020 election, stand in for Dan Kelly in a recent candidate forum. You have a member of the Supreme Court openly campaigning for Dan Kelly. And so to now have the progressive members of the court, you know, offering their endorsement, an endorsement is downright tepid. Back in the day, that was unheard of. But downright tepid compared to justices just actually showing up at candidate forums and getting, you know, really getting into the mud of a campaign where they're not the one on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the retiring justice? And I cannot remember her name.
Pat Rogensack.
Pat Rogensack's daughter, who is a judge, has actually endorsed Janet. And Pat has not endorsed Kelly.
No, she is not. She is retiring. There were a number of conservative endorsements for Jennifer Doro, who was beaten by Dan Kelly in the primary. And not a lot of them have come around and endorsed Dan Kelly. Pat Rogensack's been very quiet. Pat Rogensack's daughter, like you said, just put out this blistering opinion piece that Dan Kelly is not qualified to serve on the court because of his role in the fake elector scheme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a very good question asked about that at the debate as well to Dan Kelly. Like, hey, how come these people aren't endorsing you when they were endorsing Judge Doro? And he's like, I'll get to that in a second. Proceeds to not get to it at all.
Oh, he was the master of the pivot. He didn't answer any of the questions, and he just took advantage of his time. It was just really hard to watch.
Well, you guys are really making the case for me to watch this thing, but maybe I'll sit down later, or maybe the Brewer season will start and I'll be too distracted and I'll get to watch baseball instead. If you're looking for any information on voting, what's on your ballot, where to vote, go to myvote.wi.gov for that big election, which is now just 6 days away. Yeah, 6 days, not 1 week, 6 days to go until the election. We're going to get back to Blood, Sweat, and Tears, more music, more history with Kristen Lyerly hanging around here on a Wednesday morning, and Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio will join us as well here up north. Been playing a little bit of Blood, Sweat, and Tears because it was on this day in 1969 that they scored a number one hit with their self-titled album. This is Spinning Wheel. We played And When I Die earlier. We've got a couple of more that are going to come up here before all is said and done. But as that plays in the background, we welcome in, as we often do on Wednesdays, our friend Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR. Melissa, good
hello,
morning.
Hello. Good morning.
How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
All right. I will try to remember after the music and history, since you're here with Dr. Lyerly, that you actually covered the event that unveiled the letter with some 300 docs signing, because we don't want people to forget that Melissa is not just here for entertainment value. She is a working media type person who covers, like, you know, news, doesn't just goof around with former news guys. She works for a living. So,
yes.
All right, let's start with what today would have been the 80th birthday of Vangelis, best known for this Academy Award-winning hit. Here's my confession. I never actually saw the movie Chariots of Fire.
It's so good!
You didn't need it, Melissa? All right.
That makes one of us who has. Just Dr.
Lyerly. Only one? Kristen's the only one who's seen it? Wow. I guess we got to work on that.
It was life-changing. I learned so much from that movie.
Life-changing.
I loved it.
Wow.
All right, movie night, guys.
All right. Chariots of Fire. Vangelis would have been 80 today. He passed away in May of last year. He is heralded as one of the leading composers of electronic music, a pioneer in the genre. The Oscar, of course, was for 1981's Chariots of Fire. He also did the soundtrack to Blade Runner. And those two movies are on the top 25 list of movie soundtracks of all time, according to the American Film Institute. So pretty cool if you can get one in there. Big deal if you can get two in. He did collaborations with John Anderson of Yes, numerous other albums and anthems for special events like the 2002 World Cup. The guy knew his stuff, but of course we just know him for what has become so often parodied, Chariots of Fire, as we go in slow motion racing down the beach.
We've all done that.
We have.
In my dreams, trying to run through the sand.
Yeah. Let me tell you, somebody who's actually done, you know, run on the sand, it's a lot harder than you think. And next thing you know, you learn what plantar fasciitis is. All right, let's move on in music history to the number one song this day in 1975 by Patti LaBelle. We are very much in favor of you listening to this show on local radio, but if you watch the video feed on Facebook, you will see Melissa and Kristen doing their best to become either LaBelle or, you know, the ladies who did the follow-up on it. Which, who all was that? That was Pink. That was Maya.
Lady Gaga.
Christina.
Lady Gaga. Christina Aguilera. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
We're taking over the show right now.
Absolutely.
Karaoke hour.
Yep. let's see what else we got here. Oh, let's see. The Knights of Columbus was established in 1882. It was on this day in 1984, the Baltimore Colts became the Indianapolis Colts. In the middle of the night, the team loaded all of its stuff onto 15 Mayflower moving trucks and just drove out to Indianapolis. People in Baltimore woke up in the morning, their football team was gone.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sneaking out in the night.
Yeah, who knew you could do that?
That'll never happen to us, though.
No, never happened to the Packers. Can't. Never, never. On this day in 1871, the Royal Albert Hall is opened by Queen Victoria, a massive concert hall that has been mentioned in several other works of art, including this little clip from the Beatles' Day in the Life. That would be the same Royal Albert Hall, which Mr. Zommers tells us he has visited.
Yeah, I went to London for a school trip after my senior year. The most ambitious band trip they had done, and they discovered it was a terrible idea. They didn't do it again. But
why was it a terrible idea?
Because corralling 70 students, trying to get them into one hotel in London, and it was just a logistical nightmare besides being really expensive.
Hilarity.
I bet the
ensued.
Tube was funny.
We didn't even take it. We just like did buses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, probably that's smart.
Probably safer that way. Look, I know Melissa has seen the notes already. So, Kristen, this trivia question just goes to you. Only one Disney song has won the Grammy for Song of the Year. Can you guess what it is?
Oh, it's the one from Pocahontas.
No, it is not.
Oh.
I can show you the world.
From Aladdin.
There you go. A Whole New World won the Academy Award for Best Original Song on this day in 1993. The song also garnered a Golden Globe and two Grammys, including Song of the Year, the only Disney song to do so. On this day in 2005, Weezer released the first single from their upcoming album, Make Believe. Living in Chippewa Falls was the working title of the song.
I love Weezer. They are so much fun.
That's such an easy, it's just such an easy song to like. It's, it's got the classic good beat.
Oh, but they also did a great remake of Africa. I mean, they have a whole album.
That was fighting words. I hate that remake.
Sorry. No, Kristen, you're on an island on this one, I think.
We just made enemies, Kristen.
Sorry.
All right. One more. 2019. So 4 years ago. God, 2019 was 4 years ago already. At the age of 17, Billie Eilish debuted at number one with her album When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? Including Bad Guy. I've said before, of course, I'm not letting Billy sing here, but I mean, of people that I need to appreciate more and just sit down and listen to more, Billy Eilish might be at the top of that list.
Same. Mm-hmm.
She's just an amazing voice, and her composition, wonderful.
And the thing is, she's also funny. She's just a good person. Every time I've seen her interviewed, or I think she was on Saturday Night Live and other things, just somebody whose head appears to be screwed on straight, and you just hope it stays that way.
She's headlining Lolla this summer. We should do a field trip.
Ooh.
Where's Lolla?
Lollapalooza in Chicago.
Okay.
Aaron, you in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Man.
Come on, Dad.
Melissa, you got to get us that bus. I mean.
Oh, I get you a bus.
I know you can. We got to work on that. All right. I've left you a precious few seconds, Melissa, to say anything that's coming up on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Yeah, we have our candidate interviews this week. We're interviewing all of our school board candidates and the judges that are running in Wood County. So we've got them all on air this week.
All right.
And Morning Magazine.
As I mentioned, she covered the letter that Kristen Lierley and 300 other docs signed in the state Supreme Court race as well. Always great to visit with you. Thanks for playing along with us, as always.
Good to see you all.
Yeah.
Kristen, I'll email you.
Okay.
We'll be back with more in our next hour after this news break. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday.